has an iPhone app where you can listen to Federal News Radio, read Mike Causey's daily columns, and listen to interviews from all of your favorite shows on demand, like The Federal Drive, The Dora Beck Insider, In Depth, and Your Turn. Stay on top of the latest news affecting the federal government and contracting community, all from the palm of your hand. And the best part? It's free and easy. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
My guests today are Beth Farrell, partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge, and Jim Schweiter of counsel at McKenna Long. Today we're going to be talking more about the budget, the shutdown, what does it mean for the government community, contractors in particular. And this week we're going to get down in the weeds a little bit and talk about the details, what contractors really need to think about and where we are with regard to the budget. And with that, Jim, what is the state of our fiscal situation right here up on the Hill? I know the devil's in the details. It really isn't just about shutdown versus not shutdown.
Well, where we are right now, Roger, is that Congress is operating under a continuing appropriations resolution that it funds the government through March 18th, which is this Friday. It's Public Law 112-4, which was signed into law on March 2nd. This is the fifth continuing appropriations resolution under which the federal government has operated since the beginning of fiscal year 2011, back in last October. What's expected to happen this week is that tomorrow, actually, the House of Representatives is expecting to pass House Joint Resolution 48, yet another continuing resolution that would fund the government through April 8th of this year. As I said, the House is expected to pass it Tuesday, and the Senate is also expected to pass this bill later in the week, which will avoid another government shutdown and fund the government through April 8th.
That's that sounds pretty optimistic to me. We know things can change over time, and I know there's still a vast difference between the parties in terms of what ought to be cut or not cut. So, the prospects of a shutdown, I think are still there. But let's ask another question first. If another continuing resolution passes and is signed into law, how will that affect an agency's ability to enter into new contracts? Or do they just have to continue on with what's going on, or do they have additional contracts they can take?
Well, that's actually a good question, Roger. What's important to understand about continuing resolution is really two things. One, they appropriate funds at the rate or the level of expenditure commensurate with the preceding year's appropriation bill, and they only fund the government for the specified period, which in this case is through April 18th.
And so isn't that almost like a budget cut in and of itself if you're funding it at last year's levels?
Well, it's really a status quo. It funds the government essentially at the preceding year's level.
Okay.
But what's important about new starts and new contracts is that essentially the government cannot enter into new contracts when operating under a continuing resolution. And just let me take a minute and read you what the resolution itself says.
Okay.
It says...
I think this is the first time that something like this has been actually quoted, like a piece of legislation quoted verbatim on my show.
I'm quoting from the continuing resolution under which we're operating now, which says, such amounts as may be necessary at a rate for appropriations as provided in the applicable Appropriations Act for fiscal year 2010 for, quote, continuing projects or activities that were conducted in fiscal year 2010. So that language makes explicit that new starts, new procurements may not be entered into when we're operating under a continuing resolution. And this is actually one of the reasons that Defense Secretary Gates and various industry leaders have been complaining to Congress and the administration about the fact that we are operating under continuing resolutions.
Well, let's start talking a little bit about some of the practical considerations that contractors may face. And I just got a big question first, I think, and both of you can chime in on this, is, you know, if let's say that we go to Friday and there is no continuing resolution passed and they can't reach agreement, and, you know, the government is shut down, how much of the government actually will be shut down? Beth?
Well, Roger, there's a misconception that the government completely shuts down and all federal contracting completely shuts down, and that's not what happens. Agencies are required to implement their specific shutdown plans that have been filed with OMB, and generally agency activities will be limited to what is needed to maintain essential activities that are needed to protect life and property. But there's no definition of what essential activities are. And during the 1995 to 96 shutdown, and that was a shutdown of a period of 3 weeks, the percentage of employees furloughed varied by agency. And there were some agencies that furloughed almost 93% of their employees, agencies such as NASA. And then some agencies didn't furlough any employees at all, such as the USDA. So it's going to vary agency by agency.
Yeah, I think it even varies. Just my personal experience, I was working for GSA back during the last shutdown, and it almost went office to office. And as I recall, I was not essential, so I had to go home. But then there were other folks that I worked with who, I guess, based on the color of their money or what type of reimbursement they were receiving from other agencies, they continued to work. And so there was a split, like you just mentioned, there was a split within GSA. Does it depend a lot on is it purely sort of a political exercise as to who's essential, not essential, who continue, or is there the fiscal law issues that go in with it?
It's both. I mean, first, with respect to the fiscal law issues, if the source of funding is not the continuing resolution and there is other funding available, certainly those employees can continue to work. But employees who are funded through the continuing resolution, if there are no funds available for that, the agency will have to furlough those people who were deemed to be not essential. And again, what's essential is going to be something that's determined at the discretion of the agency and will depend upon the kinds of activities that are being undertaken. And an agency decision on that can vary agency to agency, department from department.
Yeah, and Jim, what is OMB's role in all this? Are they the focal point for the administration or for the executive branch in these type of situations?
Actually, Roger, shutdown decisions are implemented in a fairly decentralized way. OMB's role is, one, to require agencies to maintain a shutdown plan.
You know, Jim, we're going to have to shut down for some commercial breaks. We have to take a break right now, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Beth Farrell, partner McKenna Long & Aldridge, and Jim Switer, of counsel at McKenna Long. We're talking shutdown, what's going to happen, what may not happen, and what does it mean for contractors. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Every government agency has a distinct mission, yet they all share a common vision: to better serve the American people. And it's been the determination of every federal employee that's made this vision a reality and our country what it is today. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to have helped government clients meet their missions and prouder still to continue providing support. Today, Booz Allen's 20,000 dedicated professionals have the expertise, the experience, and the solutions to help you continue adapting to ever-changing public service pressures while achieving your goals. So whether you're responding to today's demands or looking beyond the horizon, count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Booz Allen Hamilton, delivering results that endure. BoozAllen.com. That's BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Beth Farrell and Jim Switer, from McKenna Long and Aldridge, and we've been talking shutdown and what it means for government contractors and government personnel. And Jim, when we took our break, you were just about to tell us how decentralized this whole process is in the executive branch in terms of, you know, deciding who works, who doesn't work, what contracts continue, what don't. Go ahead.
Well, thanks, Roger. Actually, as to OMB's role, OMB has several roles in the shutdown process. One, they provide guidance to executive branch agencies of all flavors. And there's an OMB circular known as Circular A11. Section 124 is the one that governs the shutdown process. And that provides specific guidance to the agencies. And in pertinent part, it provides that federal officials may not incur obligations that can't be funded from prior year appropriations unless such obligations are otherwise authorized by law during a shutdown. The second role of OMB is to essentially require agencies to maintain a shutdown plan, which describes what it is that they will do, how they will actually execute a shutdown. Those plans are all approved and monitored by OMB.
Do you know whether they put those up on agency websites or not, or is that just internal stuff?
That's internal stuff, because if you think about today being the age of terrorism, if bad guys knew about what an agency was going to do in a shutdown or how they would shut down, it could provide an opportunity for terrorists.
Sure, that's a great point. That is a great point.
Those plans are not publicly available.
Also, if I could add something here, the plans change periodically as circumstances change. For example, 2 weeks ago, the Department of State's shutdown plan may not have included people who deal with the state desk on Japan. But now, certainly in light of the circumstances they now have in that nation, those employees likely are to be on the critical list. So these plans are fluid. They change periodically. They're updated as circumstances change.
Okay.
OMB Circular A11 does have certain mandatory requirements for shutdown plans, including an estimate of the time that's going to be needed to execute the shutdown, the number of employees that are expected to be retained during a shutdown, that sort of thing. But the shutdown itself is actually executed at the agency level on a sort of case-by-case basis, in many respects determined by whom the agency head deems to be essential.
Okay. And, Beth, I know this is a question that obviously runs through everybody's mind, every government contractor's mind, it seems to me, at least it's something they're thinking about, is, you know, can a contractor receive payments during the shutdown? How does that work?
Well, under the OMB guidance, funds are not going to be able to be dispersed by the agencies, and that means as a practical matter that invoices are not going to be paid. So even if there are critical employees who would be otherwise processing invoices and approving them for payment, the government simply is not going to be able to disperse the funds. The only encouraging thing for contractors is that if payments are late because of a government shutdown, the government must pay an interest penalty under the Prompt Payment Act. So you would be able to get some interest for the late payment. But I think contractors need to prepare for a disruption of cash flow.
In terms of doing that, what do you think are some of the key steps in terms of communicating, you know, with, I guess, their employees, members of their teams? What would you advise them, just generally, what things that they ought to be thinking about?
Well, I think that to prepare for the shutdown, contractors need to take stock of their contracts, figure out if they are fully funded or not fully funded. Whether they're going to have a cash flow problem, whether they are going to be disrupted by the lack of essential government personnel to inspect supplies, provide technical direction, and do other things that are required for orderly administration of the contract, and plan for a cash flow disruption. See if you can accelerate payments, usually not possible. Maybe you can make delivery early and get paid before a shutdown. But otherwise, you need to take into account that you may not have cash coming in for a week period, 2 week period, 3 week period of a shutdown.
And should the contractors reach out to their contracting officers? And is
Yes.
that part of that process?
I think part of the process is to reach out to the contracting officers. A lot of contractors will be performing at federal facilities, and you won't know if your facility will be totally open only partially open. You don't know if your employees will be barred from performing at the facility. In addition to that, even if you aren't performing at a federal facility, contracting officials may be unavailable to do what needs to be done on a daily basis for the contract administration. So the best thing to do is to talk with your contracting officer and find out, is the contracting officer himself going to be around? Is there going to be a shutdown of any activities associated with that contract? And try to plan accordingly. And then let your subcontractors know.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. It seems to me, you're letting your team know what's going on and making sure they're part of the conversation, because they're going to be looking to the prime contractor for direction as to whether they're to continue perform or not. And that sort of just flows uphill, right? And then the prime's got to be looking to the contracting officer for some guidance on what steps they should or shouldn't be taking in terms of performance of that contract. So,
but Roger, I think it's important to add here that once appropriated funds are obligated to a contract and that contract is funded, the contractor's obligation to continue to perform does not end just because the government shuts down. Now, the contractor's ability to perform may be impeded because they're denied access to a facility or the contracting officer isn't there to provide them contract administration guidance, but the obligation of the contractor exists once the contract is funded.
So is it, that you just described, it seems to me that, contractors could be incurring additional costs as a result of a shutdown. Is that something they ought to be documenting, that they potentially may be, if it's a cost reimbursement contract, they could get reimbursed for?
Well, it's kind of trite to say, but I think the watchword is document, document, document. Contractors should be able
to. I've heard lawyers say that before.
Well, but the point is you really have to be able to segregate and account for which costs, have there been additional costs incurred as a result of the shutdown? And if so, you have to be able to document those. That's a simple fact.
Well, right now, on that note, we got to take another break. When we return, we'll be talking more with Beth Farrell and Jim Schweitzer from McKenna Long and Aldridge, and we've been talking shutdown, and we'll keep talking shutdown. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the Coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the Coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking with Beth Farrell and Jim Schweitzer of McKenna, Long, and Aldridge, and we've talking shutdown. And one of the things that sort of strikes me, it almost seems to me like it's a jigsaw puzzle here in terms of contract types, fixed price, cost reimbursement, time and material, and funding, like what color funds do agencies have? Are things fully funded? Are they not? Can you guys just walk through and give us some thoughts on, what it means to be fully funded, not funded, in the contract types and in the context of a shutdown and where we are right now?
Well, let me start off by talking a little bit about funding type, and then I'll yield to Beth to talk about contract type. What's important to note is that there are different periods of availability for appropriated funds once those funds are obligated to a contract. And there's essentially one-year funds, which are the kind that have to be annually appropriated by Congress. There are multi-year funds available for a period of several years. And then there's know-your money, which is available for obligation indefinitely. And really, it's if your contract is funded with multi-year appropriations or know-your money, that contract is not affected by a shutdown. It's really only the one-year appropriation that's at issue here. Beth, do you want to talk about contract type?
Yes. So if you have one-year appropriations, you can have contracts that are fully funded. And if they are fully funded, you don't stop work. You continue. But if you have a contract that is not fully funded, the government shutdown may affect your performance. Usually, cost reimbursable contracts are funded incrementally. Same with time and material contracts, IDIQ contracts, GSA schedule contracts, where orders are placed in increments, funding is placed in increments. And during a period of a government shutdown, the government is not going to be able to put additional funds on a contract. And that means if you are relying on additional funds for an order to be placed, that's not going to happen. If you are relying on additional funds to be placed on the contract for you to continue performance of cost reimbursable contract that is incrementally funded, that also is not going to happen during a period of a government shutdown. So if you are performing a contract that is not fully funded and there is a government shutdown, you may, in essence, have to stop work because there are no more funds available.
Another example of that actually is options. In many cases, you'll have a multi-year contract with a base year and several one-year options. Typically, those options rely on new funds, new appropriations in order to be executed. And if there's a government shutdown, in all likelihood, those options are not going to be executed.
That's so, correct. And
yeah, so I have a question about that. I just had a thought that, you know, what's an agency to do if they're coming up to the end of the contract period and there's no funds and they've got to exercise an option? Well, I recall, you know, depending on the type of contract, you couldn't exercise the option unless you had funds available. But now we've got a shutdown. Have you seen how agencies the last time, how they may have, you know, addressed this, whether they mod the contract to extend the period which the option could be exercised?
If I'm sitting from the perspective of a contracting officer and I had an option that needed to be exercised during a period where there may be a government shutdown, I would reach out to the contractor and see if I could negotiate a bilateral modification to exchange the date for the exercise of the option. Because as you know, if there are no funds, you can't exercise an option.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's contracting officers all over the government. They've been going through this exercise now for like a month or more, or even longer, probably just looking at their contracts, where they are on them, just like contractors are. And that's why I think one of the key things, and you touched on a little bit, is communication, and that communication with the government as to what its plans are and what it plans to do with your contract.
Well, and one of the things that we sometimes hear about, Roger, is contracting officers sort of offline suggesting, well, if you continue to perform once appropriations are available, you know, you'll get well and we'll make you whole. But there's a tremendous risk on contractors who do that because there's literally no assurance that the contract will be fully funded once the government operates again. So contractors need to be wary in that circumstance.
It seems to me that's like when you made that comment, document, that's something you'd really want to have documented from the contracting officer
Well, and it's a double-edged sword because contracting officers need to be careful not to violate the Anti-Deficiency Act by obligating the government in circumstances where funds are not available.
Yeah, that's it's sort of a catch-22, isn't it?
It is a catch-22 because everybody wants to continue performing, but there are legal constraints on the government's ability to require contractors to continue and then the contractor's corresponding right to be paid for those activities.
Yeah, taking a step back for a moment, and Jim, when we started the show, you talked about the schedule of events. You know, do you have any thoughts? You've been watching this dance go on for it's almost like one of those what did they have during the Depression? One of those dance marathon things, right? Or was that in the 50s?
Well, I don't know. I think of it more of a kabuki dance between the. The Houses of Congress and the administration, but I've been at this business far too long to predict with any certainty. I can say that in the near term, I think there's likely to be another continuing resolution. Both political parties have said they don't want to be responsible for shutting down the government. I think the hard part is going to be having the parties come to a long-term fiscal year 11 funding solution that involves cuts that both sides can agree on.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing is we're likely to have more continuing resolutions, more, you know, dates that, you know, move in time over the course of the year. Have you seen it? I mean, I've never quite seen it, you know, happen this way that for this long, where we've got this continuing resolution essentially for last year's budget, right?
Well,
Am I right about that?
Continuing resolutions are commonplace. I think historically there have only been 3 years since the 1960s in which Congress passed all 12 appropriation acts before the beginning of the next fiscal year, which is what the budget process contemplates. So continuing resolutions are commonplace. I think it's atypical to see as many as we've seen in fiscal year 11.
Well, with that, you know, I guess we'll have a continuing resolution to come back and talk about this again if it ever gets solved. I want to thank Beth Farrell and Jim Schweitzer from McKenna Long and Aldridge. I'm Roger Waldron.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune in to In-Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a firsthand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In-Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government. Talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In-Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In-Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWFD.